It is 8:32, and you are listening to Mind Over Matters here on KEXP 90.3 FM, Seattle. And we have here in the studios, alive and kicking, Joff Parrish and Maria Tomczyk, co-editors of Eat the Steak. How are you both?
Good.
Happy N30.
Happy N30 to you both.
You know, it would have been so much fun if 3 years ago today we'd had this kind of thick fog on the morning of N30. The police would have been driven nuts. It would have been great.
I think they were trying to produce that fog later in the day, weren't they?
Yeah, that's true. They were. And in fact, certain high government officials have been producing fog ever since. But it's like 3 years later, Chicken Little was right. I mean, you know, look at virtually every story we have to talk about this week, I think, is some variation on issues we were talking about 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm. But before that, why don't you give people some idea of some of the events that are happening today?
Yeah, it's interesting for folks who have gone kind of a little bit skittish about how the N30 anniversary protest / celebration has turned out the last couple of years, because they've wound up being these really kind of ugly confrontations with police. And organizers this year, from what I understand anyway, are really trying and hoping to have a different vibe and a different focus to it. They're doing what they're calling an all-day festival downtown at Westlake. And while people start rolling their eyes and going, "Oh God, not more of that," a lot of it is a focus on food banks and shelters, bringing down blankets, bringing down non-perishable food to give to, you know, a lot of the government agencies that are not, or non-governmental agencies, the, you know, private charities that are not getting funded by social services, and the safety net that is not getting funded the way it has in the past. And you know, the idea obviously is making a link between that and the privatization, and the fact that an awful lot of the services that should be provided are not being provided now, as we're in the midst of an economic downturn, and that those are in fact all linked to global justice issues. But it is very much rooted this year in local community, rooted in the idea that we don't want this to be a confrontation with police. We want it to be about the community, and we want it to be about these issues and how they're impacting the community. So folks are encouraged to bring down blankets and non-perishables and things for shelters and food banks and whatnot that you and your household can spare. Bring them down to Westlake. I think things start at 10 this morning in the next hour, and then go on through 5 this afternoon. There's a march that starts at 1 that'll wander around downtown in what will hopefully be the burned off fog by then. And you know, make a day of it.
All right. Well, one of the reasons I think people need to bring blankets more than usual is due to the cutbacks on our different budgets here locally, both King County and Seattle. And
as we talked about the Seattle City budget in the last couple of weeks, this week I'm going to talk about the county budget. They passed their budget on Monday. When Ron Sims proposed the county budget, he was on a track to cut social services almost in half this year, and he had proposed eliminating them within the next 2 to 3 years. That has been avoided. The county,
can I just repeat that? Eliminating social services within the next 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, to the
this
county.
This is a guy who the sort of political scuttlebutt around town is that he's trying to position himself for a run at governor, either against Locke, or because the two of them despise each other, or if Locke decides not to run for re-election. And he's doing it by trying to position himself for the rest of Washington as the more conservative alternative to Gary Locke. I mean, that's what a lot of this is speculated to be about, because the way the numbers add up for the budget and the revenue does not justify these kind of cuts.
No, it doesn't. And social service providers screamed when they saw Sims' budget, and they said, "Look, you have almost no cuts to the courts and jails in King County, and they can handle at least a 16% cut." Now the county council restored some money to Health and Human Services, but it's still going to be cut by almost $3 million. That's a 26% cut for the Health and Human and Community Services of King County. Basically, it's telling people that if you live in unincorporated King County, where it's cheap to live and where a lot of very poor people have had to relocate in the past 20 years, you're not going to have certain very, very important services that you need, including things like child care subsidies, which are particularly important for people who have been dumped off welfare, are single parents and have to go to work. They've been relying on those child care subsidies so that they can continue to work. There are going to be a lot of people choosing to give up their jobs because they simply can't find affordable child care anymore. And those people are either going to have to go back on welfare with the time limits involved now, or they're going to be out on the street, pretty much. So that's our
depending on relatives.
Yeah. Yeah,
that kind of a thing.
Yeah. So that's where our county budget is headed. But some social services were restored to the budget. The council had restored some $740,000 for community health centers that Ron Sims had cut. Very, very similar to what the city council had done with the city budget, restoring money for one of the most important services provided by our city and county governments. They also restored money for the King County TV channel. They cut some money from jails, but it's only a 5% cut, so much, much more could have been cut out of the jail budget. And of course, one of the most controversial things this year is the fact that $9.2 million has been cut out of the Parks and Recreation budget, a whopping 36%. And the county is on track to close the county parks, and those parks that aren't closed will be the ones that are passed on to cities like Maple Valley, Enumclaw, Renton, Tukwila to manage. So far, there's a number of them that those cities have taken on, but the ones that won't be taken on are going to be closed, completely mothballed. So really what we've got is we've got a county that is saying, you know, we're moving towards metro bus service and cops, courts, and jails, and everything else is going to be just thrown by the wayside.
Yeah, and a lot of the things that are thrown by the wayside is stuff that is penny wise and pound foolish, and not just in terms of social service costs that the public winds up, you know, eating later on in terms of up to and including jail time for people who can't cope, but also things like environmental protection, salmon restoration programs, environmental mitigations, those kind of things where, you know, once the damage is done, it's done. Or it'll take, you know, decades or centuries.
Much more expensive to restore it than it is to preserve it.
Very, very much so. So, you know, and one of the frustrations around this is because we have, with our local political system in Seattle and in King County, essentially a blank check for Democrats to do whatever they want. They don't get challenged if they are people like Ron Sims or statewide like Gary Locke, who sort of become Republican light, and certainly in terms of their social policies, because they know that they're not going to get challenged from constituents that want more services like that in terms of candidates running against them, whereas they might be able to pick up votes from more conservative voters who are opposed to having their taxes spent on such things. So, you know, long term, where the political pressure has to come from is not so much these social service programs coming hat in hand to the county council saying, won't you please restore at least a portion of the decimation that our budgets are taking. It comes from finding people to run against some of these politicians who are proposing these budgets in the first place.
Yeah, an interesting thing is our mostly conservative county council directed Sheriff Dave Reichert to use all of the money going to the county sheriff's office just for law enforcement and not to use any of it for anti-terrorism, which I thought was quite funny. Here you have the members of the county council who are much more conservative, supposedly, than Ron Sims, basically saying, no, this is a shift that we have to do in order to save money.
Yeah, you literally had Rob McKenna and Dave Irons, who, if people remember, he was the Republican who unseated Brian Drazkowski a couple of years ago by, you know, running as the true Republican, the guy who is a real conservative as opposed to the flaky Brian Drazkowski who, you know, sometimes voted with the Democrats. These two, who are probably two of the most conservative Republicans on the county council, are up there saying, yes, we have to have a renewed commitment to social services in King County because, you know, otherwise, as we were saying, it's penny wise and pound foolish, and we believe that Ron Sims is not honoring his commitment to the community. When you have conservative Republicans saying that, you got a problem in the county executive.
Mm. You really do. It's true.
Meanwhile, you've got the Port of Seattle, which goes well beyond the port of Seattle. It's really countywide.
Yeah, it's actually a taxing authority that impacts people's taxes all across the county.
Right. They decided to jack up everybody's taxes
by 37%. Yeah, that was amazing. It was a 4-1 vote, and the single no vote came from the chairman, Bob Edwards, who said, well, you know, we should raise taxes, but not that much. That shows you what the port is thinking.
And this includes the candidate who ran as a reform candidate a couple of years ago, who voted with the yes also.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, you can look at what they're going to spend it for, what they're going to spend it on. More than 40% of it is going to go to service existing debt on facilities. That includes the Bell Harbor Convention Center. I don't even have any idea if that thing is used very much.
Yeah, it is used. It's used primarily by big corporations and port clients. And it also goes to service the bonds and the costs that were incurred refurbishing Terminal 5 and Terminal 18, both of which were these enormous corporate welfare projects for terminals that are used exclusively in long-term leases by single clients. And we're talking the type of projects of several hundred million dollars apiece, the same sorts of size of projects that were used to build the two stadiums in town, done at about the same time with very little public even process, let alone controversy.
And there's not much oversight as to how much they charge these clients for using these facilities. I mean, you would expect the rent collected on these facilities to cover at least a large portion of the debt on them, but obviously that's not what's happening, because taxpayers are having to cover it.
Yeah. The port has been rife for a really long time as being one of the most in a way corrupt agencies in local government, because it is so much of the corporate welfare ladled out variety, and now our taxes are going up.
Yeah, it's amazing from the meetings I've been to, the number of people that show up for these different issues, and almost, you know, every single person in the audience who speaks to them says, do this or don't do that. And the port commissioners just, when they turn around, they vote, and they vote completely against what the populace wants. I mean, like every single time.
Yeah, no, I think that's an indication that they've been striking deals behind closed doors with the people they view their real constituents, the big companies that use the port and the businesses that they serve, you know, with the Bell Harbor Convention Center and so forth.
Although I must say, as you describe that, I'm sitting here and thinking, my God, that sounds exactly like the school board.
Actually, it sounds a lot like almost all elected positions.
No, and it would be good if there were, you know, some more press coverage of some of the things that the port does, a look at the port budget, for example, which, you know, I mean, we see now our two main newspapers covering things like the city council budget and the county budget and the goings-on at City Hall, but we don't see any look at all at what's going on at the port, except when they announce, oh, we're going to build a new cruise ship terminal. Well, we've got one already, you know. Is it paying for itself? No. You know, is the new one going to pay for itself? Well, nobody's asking that question.
Yeah. All right.
Although it's certainly going to pay for the long-term cruise ship company clients that are you know, paying like a dollar a year for the next 99 years or whatever for the use
whatever
of
whatever little pittance they're charging them.
All right. Last note on the Seattle budget, Maria.
Oh, yes. There was one little something extra included in the Seattle city budget that didn't come out until this past week. The city council agreed to pay $27 million out of their capital construction. Well, actually, it's a loan out of their capital construction funds to finish the new Macaw Hall Opera House. Now, the total construction cost of the Opera House is $130 million. $72 million of that was supposed to be from private sources, but only $60 million has been coughed up so far, and no more has been pledged. So that means that of the remaining funds, the city of Seattle had collected $29 million from a 1999 bond levy, and King County and the state of Washington, King County was supposed to pitch in $5 million, and the state was supposed to pitch in $12 million. But so far, the county and the state have only coughed up $2 million each, which means the city of Seattle is going to be responsible for, or is going to loan to the Opera Hall, $3 million of King County's tab, $10 million of the state's tab, and $12 million that private donors didn't give.
For a total of
$27 million if you add in cost overruns. That's almost 50% of the whole funding. Now, I think the city should sit down and say, I think we ought to rename this thing the City of Seattle People's Opera Hall.
Well, either that or, you know, you have the kind of money that's going into the actual construction. There should be line items in the future for free admission to the public so that the public can actually go into the opera hall that the public helped build.
Oh, and no, maybe, that's not what's happening at all. In fact, they're going to try to recoup this. They're calling this a loan. They're going to try to recoup this by increasing ticket prices. So that means many people in the city of Seattle won't be able to afford to go inside it, and increasing the lease to groups that want to use the hall, which I think is going to narrow the number of groups that are going to want to use it.
Yeah, and the types of groups that will use it
exactly.
Also.
Well, that's good news.
You think?
Okay. On that happy note, let's just keep moving along. The job, you are personally affected by a change in the Washington State high risk insurance pool.
Well, yeah, but it's not just me. I mean, they didn't sit there and say, okay, we've got this particular customer over in the Central District of Seattle,
and we want on the radio.
Yeah, exactly. We want to make sure that his rates are particularly odious next year. No, the Washington State high risk insurance pool is the state program that was created by the legislature about 3 years ago now, in its lobbyist induced wisdom, because statewide health insurance companies did not want to pay for sick people. They didn't want to insure them, so that the population of patients of the healthcare system in the state of Washington, the 8% that were deemed to be the sickest, and that certainly includes me because I've had a couple transplants and, you know, had a stroke and some other problems, were then no longer to be insured by private insurance companies. Those insurance companies had to keep their existing patients, although we then found the insurance companies dumping many of them as quickly as they could by, you know, jacking up their rates and other ways to kind of force them off the rolls, would not take any new patients, and those patients would then go on to the state high-risk insurance pool rolls. Now, the problem with the high-risk insurance pool, of course, is that it's expensive, and the other problem with it is it takes those people who are most chronically ill that they cannot work. A lot of those folks are people who have long-term disabilities. A lot of them are folks like cancer patients, people with AIDS, people like me with transplants who have to buy immunosuppressant drugs that are very expensive. And so you find a lot of those people being unable to work. A lot of them are elderly, et cetera, and many of them are on fixed incomes. They're on Social Security disability in particular, which pays about $800 a month. And so now we have the high-risk insurance pool saying that they're going to be raising their rates very substantially, anywhere from 30% higher to it could go almost as much as double, depending on the various criteria that they use. It's already, I wrote a check for a year a couple of weeks ago that ran me about $3,300. It comes out to a little under $300 a month.
For just me, not
for anybody else. I mean, that's the sort of a rates that normally a family of four would be paying for insurance, you know, if they have some, you know, a couple of additional risk factors, if somebody smokes, if they live in a bad neighborhood, whatever. But, you know, I'm paying that by myself. You know, it could be as much as $500 or $600 a month next year. And for people who live on, say, $800 a month in disability payments, and those, you know, that's not a handout. That's out of the Social Security fund that they paid into all their life. That's one of the things Social Security is used for. That doesn't leave any money for things like food or clothing or anything like that. And that's before the co-pays. That doesn't mean you get free health care. That just means you have a copay to pay. So, you know, you kind of have a choice. You can either get the health care that will keep you alive, or you can eat, or you can, you know, have a place to live, or things like that. This was designed as a program of last resort that not only private insurance companies, but the basic health plan that the state also runs, and various other agencies, dumped people into because they didn't want to incur the cost. Now this agency of last resort is essentially going to be kicking off a lot of people who cannot afford those premiums.
Because they don't want to incur the cost.
So what's going to happen to those people? They they're either going to have to find some private way, again, as we were talking about with the county budget, some private way of raising the costs, or they're going to be out on the street, or they're not going to get the health care, and they're probably either going to increase the cost of society in some other way through emergency room visits and that sort of thing, and or they're going to die.
Yeah, so we really need a better healthcare system in the state of Washington. Really, nationwide, we need a better way to do this.
You know, I talk to doctors all the time, obviously, because I incur medical costs all the time. And, you know, they're just up in arms. You know, they can't practice medicine, number one. They certainly, have to spend an enormous amount of their time dealing with the paperwork, dealing with the bureaucracy and so forth. And then the costs are so high, not because of the quality of healthcare, but because you have so many middle people that have inserted themselves into the process, making money out of the process. It has nothing to do with the end result of the health care that's given. And what winds up happening is that for the people who can afford it, or more accurately, for the businesses who can afford to, you know, incur the cost of providing that benefit to their employees, you know, people can get very good health care in this country. For people who cannot afford it, for people who aren't in a company that offers group-wide coverage at an HMO that has decent coverage, or people who can't afford individual care, the quality of health care in this country is getting worse and worse and worse, and it's approaching third world levels for a lot of people whose only access to medical care is the emergency room.
All right. Well,
and again, these are all things we were talking about at N30 3 years ago. Privatization of services, privatization of all of these different what are considered essential needs.
All right. Well, sticking with our theme for the day, privatization, the ILWU settled their negotiations, their disputes this week. Is it a happy ending?
It's a happy ending in that Taft-Hartley is not going to be invoked a couple of days after Christmas. You're not going to have another lockout. You're not going to have the National Guard or the Navy or whomever coming in and working the ports. Both sides are saying that they're happy with the outcome. But what has really happened, I think, with the settlement, if folks remember, we had the lockout of the 29 West Coast ports in late September, early October, which was followed by Bush's invoking of Taft-Hartley, which usually does not lead to a settlement. Usually it leads to an 80-day cooling-off period in which people harden their positions, followed by a resumption of hostilities. The negotiations that took place this time, ostensibly the original conflict was over incorporating new technology into the ports, over the fact that as the technology enables new jobs to be created and old ones to be phased out, whether those new jobs would be union jobs or not. The Pacific Maritime Association, which was the agency that represents the shippers, won the right to create those new jobs, use the new technology. They gave the concession that people who were forced out of those jobs would not be simply laid off. They would be reassigned and retrained to other jobs. But what really it boils down to, and we've seen this over and over again in labor conflicts involving industries that are affected by globalization, is that you have the union being given money in exchange for jobs security, because long term the impact of this 5-10 years down the road will be to create the precedent of non-union jobs, will be to create the precedent of the employer being able to create jobs on the one hand and phase out jobs on the other, and then the employer can turn around and play with where those jobs are located, whether they're here or somewhere after the FTAA is ratified. Say, you know, we're gonna offload those goods in Canada or Mexico or Chile instead. You know, there's only so much with some types of work where you can move around geographically. So what you do instead is you create the precedent of whether they're going to be unionized or non-unionized, and you change change the basic negotiating standard in terms of the wages, in terms of the benefits and so forth, that people at all ports up and down the Pacific, you know, across borders will be allowed to do. And so, you know, you have basically the trade-off of money in exchange for job security. It's the same thing that a lot of the different Boeing unions are up against. And you contrast this with the wave of labor strife that's going on across Europe right now, where you have firefighters in England, you have teachers in Britain, you have all kinds of civil servants in France that are up in arms. You haven't had any air traffic in several days in France because that includes the air traffic controllers, but it's not just them. It's also really just about every sector of public employees. You have massive strikes going on in Italy, and it's all over the same type of thing. It's all over governments trying to either privatize social services or trying to cut back on their spending on social services. And again, this boils down to the same thing that we've seen with the IMF and structural adjustment programs in the third world for many years, of corporations and the politicians that they fund, the governments that they fund, saying, you know, we don't want to be paying our fair share, and at the same time, we want the pot of gold the governments are sitting on in terms of the services that they provide and the money that customers pay into those services.
All right. Well, with that, we are once again out of time, but we do have time to mention the N30 events happening again today.
Yes, it running all day today from about 10 o'clock until 5 down at Westlake. Bring blankets, bring food, bring non-perishable goods of all types. They will be distributed to local charities and local do-good agencies of all types. And then there is a march that will be starting at 1 o'clock. Bring your noisemakers, bring your instruments of musical joy, and we will be demanding peace as well. I mean, that's something we haven't talked about, but, you know, all of the wars and militarization that's going on is all part of that same issue. It really is all basically the same thing. Bring it all in, make some noise, take over downtown again, and let's turn this into a holiday.
All right. Well, with that, we are once again out of time, talking this week with Jav Parrish and Maria Tomchik, co-editors at Eat the State, and tell people where they can find Eat the State.
Eat the State can be found around town in bars, bookstores, cafes, coffee shops, restaurants. You can find us on the web at...
Eat the State's creators can be found in bars, bookshops, bookstores.
Grocery stores.
Yeah.
Workplaces. And you can find us on the web at www.eatthestate.org. That's Eat the State, all one word, .org. And if you have questions, comments, tips, or would like to volunteer, you can call us at 903-9461.
Area code 206.
All right. and real quickly here, I know we're all overjoyed to see Henry Kissinger coming out of the cryogenic tank this week.
That's the Bush administration policy.
You know, one of the things I heard with the Bush administration is they've cut back funding for the paleontology program at the Dinosaur National Monument, and so I think that's actually turned him out. Yeah,
yeah, they've redirected it to a program to reanimate corpses.
so the dinosaurs are coming out now, and you know we're placing them in jobs. You know, various civil service programs.
Yeah, Maria, weren't you comparing the current administration to
Night of the Living Dead?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's weird because now that I think about all those press conferences, they were all in black and white. So
yeah.